Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Vicar. Greetings, dear congregation, as we gather to unburden ourselves.
It's just those words. It's basically that's what sends you off.
I can't. No, you don't use your normal voice to say these kind of words.
Oh, right,
do you?
I see. Yes, congregation. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, it's another Confessions podcast. That's what this is. Matt is here, obviously.
Yep.
Holly is here, obviously.
Absolutely.
Susie is not because she's in a tent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We're going to hit the dance floor in our confession from the crypt. There's a look through the parish notice board. More of the confessions that we simply are not allowed to do on the radio. And, of course, all the confessions from the hot rocking Drive Time show on Greatest Hits Radio, which you can hear Monday to Friday, 4 till 7, including George's drinking disaster in one bourbon, one scotch, one beer, Tobias's terrible television tale, Turn It On Again, Jeff's confession, Vorsprung durch Technik. But first, Horace's court chaos in Good Morning Judge.
Simon Mayo's confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's comes from Horace. Horace, thank you very much indeed for this. Father Simon, Brother Matt, Sister Holly, and the collective Greatest Hits Forgiveness team. I always enjoy the confessions, but the recent one where, Simon, you adopted the allo allo French accent for a French exam oral made my blood run cold and awoke a long dormant memory from 1984, which I had hoped I had forgotten for good. I was 19 at the time, going to a London college with a view to doing something useful in my life. My best mate at the time was Andy, we'll call him that anyway, who was a bit of a whiz with chat-up lines in various languages and who had a mischievous streak, which everybody loved, unless, of course, they were on the receiving end, and that, Father Simon, is primarily the cause of my confession. You see, we had both opted for a work experience day, which involved attending various criminal courts and observing. For us, though, it was an excellent way to skive off college and have a bit of a laugh in London at the same time. We marvelled at the posh surroundings that we found ourselves in, and during lunch we mingled with what we could only guess were the creme de la creme of the judicial world. We were halfway through the afternoon and seriously contemplating opening time at the pub when an interesting case arose, which involved a German tourist who'd been caught shoplifting. After much to-ing and fro-ing in the court, which at times seemed like a sketch from Fawlty Towers, it became apparent that the tourist in question did not fully understand what was going on. The judge, slightly exasperated, therefore turned to the public gallery in a last-ditch attempt to get the case underway and asked if anybody could speak German and would be willing to act as a court interpreter.
What?
Quick as a flash, Andy volunteered. And before I could dissuade him from the notion, he was on his way into the court to be formally sworn in for the proceedings. This, Father Simon, is where things went a bit pear-shaped, or burner-shaped, as they say in Germany. I mean, this is ridiculous. And he kept giving me his look. I knew he was in trouble, but I hoped it was just me misinterpreting the situation. However, after being formally sworn in, Andy was finally asked by the prosecution if he could ask the tourist why he had stolen the goods. Andy, delighted to be at the centre of the attention in the court, at which point you could have heard a pin drop, drew himself up to his full height, grasped at two non-existent lapels on his front, presumably like the lawyers tend to do with their gowns, and curling his upper lip and tilting his head back, he said very loudly, "Why did you steal the goods?"
Oh, no.
Well, Father Simon, the place erupted. The public gallery was howling with laughter, and the poor German looked totally perplexed. Looking this way and that, the judge blew a minor gasket at this irreverent jocularity and immediately brought proceedings into order. To top it off, he fined Andy £5 for contempt of court, which we could see coming a mile off, and began to lecture him about wasting the court's time. Fair enough, really. Yeah. It was at this moment, Father Simon, that I chose to sneak out of the public gallery and abandon Andy to his fate. Although we did catch up afterwards and have a bit of a laugh about it all, and it got a mention in the Times the next day, would you believe? I'm not at all surprised. We did eventually drift apart after college. The event still haunts me today, and the recent confession forced me to seek absolution for a guilt which has been carried all these years. In particular, I seek forgiveness for letting Andy volunteer in the first place and then abandoning him in his hour of need. However, and perhaps most importantly, I have forever worried about the poor German tourist and what he thought of this example of British justice, bringing an interpreter down, swearing him in, and then fining him for not doing his job properly. I never did find out what happened to him, and so, Father Simon, I seek forgiveness for my part in this sorry tale, in the hope that I can now finally put this memory to rest. Yours contritely and in hope of absolution, Horace. I imagine that's Horace, as in Horace Rumpole.
Yeah.
Of the Bailey. Well, if he couldn't see that there was trouble coming, if he's pretending to speak German in a court in London, or anywhere, to be perfectly honest, guy's a fool. Sister Holly...
I mean, he was officially sworn in.
Yes.
He just made such a mockery of the British justice system. Absolutely dreadful. Wasted the court's time as well. Wasted everybody's time. Also, you know, obviously he abandoned his friend. He could have held him back or you know, stopped him. But no, he didn't. And so I think it's an open and shut case. Absolutely not forgiven.
I would love to have been there just to see him say, why did you steal the goods, Brother Matthew?
I mean, come on. That is superb work. And by the way, it's up to the... How did the court not work out that we're going to need a German translator? It's up to you guys to come up with a translator. Not appeal to the public gallery. Is there someone there who happens to speak German and could do our translating for us?
Yes.
It's your job. You come up with a translator and not hope that there's someone called Andy who's going to put up his hand and then just
do it
in a low, hello accent. Fabulous. I loved it. And he got in the Times as well. Good for you. So definitely forgiven.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
I wonder how many more of these there are, because this was clearly inspired by the Allo Allo one.
Definitely. I mean, which of us could honestly say, if you were sat in a courtroom and the judge said, does anyone here speak German and can translate, which of us would not put up our hand and go, yeah, I'll give this a go. This will be hilarious.
I think most people wouldn't.
No?
Yes.
Oh, right.
I think the key thing in that confession is, he was fined for contempt.
Yes, but didn't the judge pay for it himself? Probably did, didn't
no.
he? I think maybe he did. Maybe
you
left
just
that bit
that
out.
Up.
But I think it definitely happened. Yeah.
Anyway, parish notice board.
Of course.
How's that looking at the moment?
Yeah, five stars as per. Mama Duck says, five stars, guaranteed giggles. Good to have the pod back. Laughs had throughout, which is nice and succinct. Mama Duck, well done. Dad of Will says, five stars, favourite podcast. I'm a long-time listener to the podcast, even when you were at the other place.
Wherever that was.
Every episode is hilarious, and a highlight of mine is Matt finding the thinnest thread to grasp onto to try and forgive. Keep up the good work. Many thanks, Dad of Will. And RG777 says...
It's a bot, for sure.
Five stars. And for that reason, five stars. The best podcast ever. This pod is dangerous. With Simon's accents and Matt's commentary, you might laugh so hard you dislodge your earbuds from your ears, but still worth tuning in every week and running that risk. I haven't written my own confession, as I know it won't get on. It involved a cat, a newly acquired hamster, and a cover-up by an incompetent but well-meaning dad.
Doesn't sound promising.
No. Never leave us again, Simon. And again, we'll point out, it wasn't our decision. It was not our call.
Wasn't leaving you.
No. Remember, if you want to get a shout out on the pod, then you need to leave us a review. But the only way you get your shout out on the pod is by making it a 5-star review.
We've had some requests for some tat from the tat cupboard, I think, Holly.
Yes, we have actually. We've got a lovely email in from Jenny. She says, Dear Father Simon, Brother Matt and Sisters Holly and Susie, I would like to write a quick note expressing my gratitude for the podcast. I grew up listening to confessions in my mum's Ford Fiesta back in the 90s and have loved listening to this show for many years. Without making myself sound ancient, I now have a 10-year-old of my own and we love listening to the pod on our way back from school. We have so many laughs together. Could I possibly request some Simon Mayo related tat? Thank you from Mum Jenny and 10-year-old Zach.
Do we have anything? You're in charge of the cupboard.
Well, the problem with the tat cupboard at the moment is I feel like actually our tat is quite good at the moment. It's actually...
Tat doesn't mean bad.
No,
it's
quite good.
Okay.
We've got mugs and signed postcards, so I can definitely guess.
Who signed the postcards?
Simon.
Oh, Simon's either. That's fair enough.
It's not signed by you.
No, not signed by me.
If you want.
Maybe those would be the extra special tats. The ones signed by me and Holly. Yeah. Also, how does having a 10-year-old make you ancient? What does that make me? Yeah. Goodness
yes.
me.
No, that's not that on. That's a strange
not
thing.
Not on at all.
Jenny, I mean, imagine being as old as Jenny.
Imagine that.
Incredible.
10 years old. Oh.
Jenny and Zach will send you probably a mug and a card, maybe signed only by me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe by Matt as well. We'll dig something out for sure. If you have your very own reason why you deserve some tat, you just have to convince us via an email, confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Quick couple of mentions to Carito Cosplays, Martin, Stephen Hill and Astrid Opeti, who were among those who tweeted and blue-skied the secret phrase from last week's podcast, which was, of course, very dangerous substance number one. Matt will, of course, have a new one for you at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
Hang on for that. Now, to head to the gutter and to join those in the parish who are sending in confessions that are simply not for broadcast, sometimes I think they're just doing it to be included in this section.
I'm all in favour of that.
Yeah.
Love it.
Jemima, I know you have a thing against red-haired ladies because your boyfriend cheated on you with one a few years back, but that doesn't excuse you not hiring the ideal candidate for the administrator's job at work because she was a redhead.
Ah.
In fact, I think you'll find that's illegal.
Yep.
And so therefore...
not allowed.
I mean, there's holding a grudge.
Yeah.
And we all carry grudges. We all hold grudges.
I think, don't we all carry grudges against, like, people who've got the same name as people who've crossed us in the past? We all do that, don't we?
But if you've been profoundly let down by someone with red hair...
Yeah, I would take against them from then on.
Really? All
people with red hair, people with red tops, people with red trousers, I'd go against the whole lot of them. It would just be... That would be it! With me and
that would
the
be
colour
everyone,
red.
Though.
Anyway,
yeah.
Jemima,
yeah.
Obviously anything that involves illegality...
not allowed, I'm afraid.
...is not allowed on the show, and therefore you... I mean, well done for taking the first step in seeking forgiveness, but we couldn't include you. I'm very sorry. And Lynn, throwing up into your friend's Chanel handbag...
good start. I like it already.
...whilst on the 297 bus East Ruislip at 2 o'clock in the morning...
Heaven.
...was a bit... too much for tea time listening, I'm afraid.
I like the detail there in that one.
Yeah. That's why it gets on, isn't it? The Chanel handbag.
No, the 297 bus to East Ruislip, I think.
It is very good. That's like a comedy destination.
Yeah.
But it's the combination of puke and a very posh and expensive handbag.
Yeah.
It's just
literally
gross, isn't
else.
It? No one wants to hear that at 6 o'clock.
So, Lynn, thank you very much indeed for sending that, but I'm afraid you are not your NFB. Not for broadcast.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Right, let's get back to those confessions that did make the cut. George's drinks cabinet catastrophe. One bourbon, one scotch, one beer.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Confess all. We won't tell anyone.
Today's confession comes from George. Thank you, George, Father Simon, Matt, Susie and Holly. I am here to confess a deed that I undertook many years ago. Began in the mid-90s, so we're June 1996, and I was a teenager, late teenager. My parents, Big Rog and Little Anne, had gone away on holiday and rather foolishly left me, a mere 18 years old, at home, alone, for the week. Their last words before setting off to the airport were, "Be good and remember, no parties."
Oh, dear.
Of course, I replied, "I need to study for my A-level exams anyway." I was lying. Father Simon, as any sporting enthusiast will tell you, June 1996 was the time of one of the greatest European football championships of all time. It's the time of Shearer, Gazza, Sheringham, David Seaman, amongst others. Obviously, Holly knows exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Not that she was born at the time. We're talking about the Euros. So the Euros are on at the moment.
Yeah.
Whilst I was attempting to revise for my A-levels, A few of my mates decided to come round to the house to watch the England against the Netherlands game.
Oh, yeah.
They brought a few beers with them and we watched what can only be described as one of the greatest England victories of all time, thrashing Holland 4-1, and my mates and I were absolutely jubilant. Unfortunately, after the game had finished, we'd run out of beer. Well, this isn't on, I thought. We've just witnessed this amazing game and we wanted to carry on the celebrations. It was just then that, like a beacon of light flashing towards me, I spotted my parents' drinks cabinet. It was one of those old-fashioned mahogany bureau types. It even had a lock on it, which fortunately still had the key in.
Yeah.
Thus making the lock completely useless. We strolled over and cautiously opened it up. It was like Harry Potter opening up the Chamber of Secrets. There in front of us were various bottles and what appeared to be potions. There was the standard brandy decanter and, of course, the yucky yellow one.
Yeah.
But what caught our eye were the big bottles of Bacardi rum and Smirnoff vodka. Now, Father Simon, my parents weren't really big drinkers, so I felt sorry for these poor drinks. They were just there, left there, collecting dust. They needed fulfilment in their dismal lives. So what better way than toasting England's fine win in the Euros than this? A great night was had by all, and there was many a song and dance to be had, especially Three Lions on a Shirt, because that was the year. Well, to every yin, there is a yang, of course, and the next day, I was very hungover. I realise now I should always drink responsibly, kids. Once my mates had left, I began the big clean-up. It was then that I noticed the bottles of Bacardi and Smirnoff sat on the kitchen worktop and they were totally empty. Had we really drunk them both? Anyway, obviously, Father Simon, the right thing to do would have been to go to the local off-license and buy two replacement bottles. But being 18 years old and having no money, this wasn't an option. Of course, the other option would be to just tell my parents when they came back from holiday, but I didn't want them to know I'd had a big, heavy night and betrayed their trust, so I did the only other thing I could think of at the time. These drinks were of clear colour. Mm. What a spot of luck. I looked up at the kitchen tap. There you go, a light bulb moment, and I decided to fill the bottles back up with water.
Right.
I then put them strategically back in the drinks cabinet. My parents would never know. They never opened the darn thing. Anyway, I was completely right. My parents came back a few days later to a spotless house, and my dad and I enjoyed the England-Spain game, which we won on penalties.
Yeah, we did.
All's well that ends well. Until, well, a few months hence, an autumn evening and my dad's 50th birthday. A party was thrown for him at our house. We had lots and lots of guests around. The evening was going well. We were playing lots of oldies. There was plenty of dancing. And it was then that the guests seemed to feel the need for more drinks. You've guessed it, my stepmum headed over to the drinks cabinet and got a variety of bottles out, including the Bacardi and vodka bottles. Anyone for vodka and orange? She announced. A rum and coke, maybe. My face dropped. Father Simon, what happened over the next few hours was a true phenomenon. On tenterhooks, I glared across at several guests who were ploughing back their rum and cokes and vodkas and oranges, vodkas and lemonades. I studied their faces with intrigue and dread. However, as one drink led to another and nothing was said, I concluded that no one had actually noticed. These prize idiots were drinking water and coke, water with orange and water with lemonade, and they were none the wiser. Did they actually believe they were getting more drunk as the night went on? One guy called Chris at the end of the night said, oh, I better get a taxi home. And I said, good idea, Chris, you've had a lot to drink.
Yeah.
I'll call you a taxi, even though I knew he was as sober as a judge. Well, Father Simon, this secret has stayed with me for 30 years. My parents never knew anything. So I seek your forgiveness, first of all, from my parents, whose trust I broke by raiding their drinks cabinet. I'm unsure whether to ask for forgiveness from the guests, who, let's be honest, had a good night anyway and would have had the delightful bonus of not having a hangover the next morning. I do ask forgiveness from Chris. He had to fork out £25 for a taxi and he didn't need to have one. And please remember, before you judge my deceitfulness, that those drinks had the best time ever. Yeah, I think that's the weakest argument, actually. I don't think we need any argument on behalf of a bottle of drink. I now hand my fate over to you, says George. Sister Holly, the voice of responsibility goes first.
Well, it was a trilogy of errors, really. We start things off stealing. That's never a good idea. Stealing from your parents and taking those drinks. It was just never a good idea to begin with. Secondly, you could have told the parents when they came back. You didn't. And then, when the party then happened months later, you could have told your friend Chris, look, don't bother getting a taxi because actually it was water. And you didn't do that either. Honesty is the best policy, and that's why I'm not forgiving this at all.
I kind of thought you'd say that. However, Brother Matthew.
Yeah, so I'm going to forgive. And before I get to that, why on earth do we lock drinks cabinets? I've never understood that. We are living in the house, so we're going to be drinking. Who you keep wing it locked from? It doesn't make any sense.
Also, but if you leave a key in the lock, yeah, well, it's not locked anyway.
Make any sense, does it? No. So I'm going to forgive because what a fabulous social experiment this was in seeing how people behave when they think they're drinking alcohol, but they're not. And they were drunk on life, weren't they? They were drunk on the party. That's how they were intoxicated with each other's company. And
Yes,
and instead
high on the happy side.
High on the happy side. And so therefore, and no hangover either. Everyone's a winner, nothing to forgive, definitely forgiven.
Do people have drinks cabinets? Do your parents have a drinks cabinet?
Yes, but it's not, it's a cupboard, it's not lockable.
I mean, I suppose the lockable thing must have been just because there are kids there who might help themselves.
I think it's just an old cabinet, which just happens to have a lock. A lot of people have sort of old lockable drinks cabinets, don't they?
Yeah, we keep ours in an armoire, which basically there's no reason for that. I don't understand what the armoire is there for, really.
What is an armoire?
It's an armoire. It's like a it's a thing. It's a big cupboard. That's what it is. It's a big cupboard, but it's a bit French.
Is that from armory?
No, armoire. Armoire.
How do you spell that?
A-R-M-O-I-R-E. Armoire is like French for wardrobe, which this is not. It's an armoire. And that is where we keep our booze. And that is lockable. It is a lockable armoire.
Large wardrobe with doors and shelves from the 1570s, from the French armoire.
Armoire.
Old French, meaning cupboard, bookcase, reliquary.
Reliquary.
Closet, chest. A place for implements or tools, gear, tools, ship's tackle, weapons of war.
And Bacardi. Yeah.
No reference to Bacardi at all.
Yeah.
I don't know it. You're the only person I know who's got
an armoire. Yes. I know there's loads of us. Loads of us. All the classy people of North London
makes
with our armoires.
Makes you part of the media elite.
The media elite is definitely me. Yeah. I mean, the fans of armoires, right now, they're like, finally, someone's talking about armoires.
Okay. Mm. Well, if there are any other armoire confessions, I think we need to have
them. Yeah, absolutely.
Tom emails, Simon, having just listened to tonight's confession involving alcohol, I'd like to relate a tale of low alcohol consumption from back in 1970. I was invited to a house party in a mate's flat. I turned up and the place was rammed. There must have been about 80 people in there.
Wow.
Everyone was very angry, though, as there was little to no alcohol. Turns out the party was a bring-your-own-booze party, but no one had actually told anyone. So everyone rocked up expecting drinks given to them, and everyone left before 10, and the party was a disaster.
But
really.
But who goes to a party without booze? That's ridiculous.
Well, are you supposed to bring booze to a party?
Of course. Really? No. I mean, who
bring
doesn't?
Bring your own booze.
Bring your, well, yeah, but
they
even,
didn't know it was bring
your own booze. But even if it doesn't say on the invite, if you were to go, if you and your boyfriend were to go to a party, would you take booze?
Probably not. No.
What would you take?
Well, you might like bring some chocolates.
Chocolates,
or
flowers,
but
a
like
book.
I wouldn't
a
bring
book?
Booze.
A book.
But they're providing the booze. If you're hosting a party, you should have the food and the drink
already there.
You need to take something, and also
yeah, but that's only as a gesture. You don't actually drink it at the party.
If you've got
that's
a bottle of wine, it's like you know a bit shabby, which someone else has brought to your place.
Yeah,
that's the moment where you take that bottle.
You take
and
that
you,
one. Yes.
And you
have some Advocar. I'll take back some of the gin. I'll be yes. No, that works every time.
So you've learned something today.
Yes.
That an arm was.
What education this show is. Still to come, Wicker Man has a dance floor disaster. We go back to boarding school in Tobias's confession, but not before Jeff's confession, Vorsprung durch Technik.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's confession comes from Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I might need to explain a few things as we go along, but let's see how we do.
Okay.
Simon and team, I have a confession to submit to the Judgmental Collective. And with the Euros underway in Germany, this has a timely relevance, I think. My confession for which I seek forgiveness occurred in the summer of 2006, the year that Germany hosted the World Cup. But fear not, there is no reference to England's performance. Instead, the focus is upon the host nation, and in particular their dedicated football fan base, for this may be the largest request for absolution that has ever graced your fine show.
Wow.
Back in 2005 and 2006, I worked in the textile industry. And the company I worked for hit upon a fantastic opportunity, a wheeze linked to the World Cup. There was a three-way deal between a well-known marketing agency, an international phone brand, and ourselves. The proposition was simple. In the run-up to the World Cup, the marketing agency and the well-known German phone company announced a phone deal that offered the latest digital phone with a reduced rate to all new customers. And to seal the deal, every new customer would receive a football shirt in the German team colours.
Ah.
This shirt was even endorsed by the German FA. Germany became awash with posters, billboards, TV and radio advertising to encourage fans to unite in support of their national team by wearing the unofficial shirt emblazoned with the phone company's logo. It was one of the most successful phone promotions ever launched, and our factories struggled to keep up with the demand for the football shirts. We eventually manufactured and supplied over 960,000 shirts.
Wow.
If you rewatch the 2006 World Cup and pay attention to the crowds attending the Germany games, you can see these shirts almost outnumbering the official team shirts. So given the success and contentment of the marketing agency, the phone company, and the customers themselves, where could there possibly be any requirement for forgiveness, I hear you ask?
Well, where could it be? Yeah.
Thank you. Well, Simon, as you may or may not all be aware, clothing has labelling requirements.
Uh-huh.
The first being the size, followed by the country of origin and the wash care instructions. What was also required was a style code. This code is normally a numerical configuration so that retailers can ensure they are ordering the correct garment and that logistical operations can store, pick and pack goods and maintain accurate records. Technical detail here, very important.
Yes.
Over the prior 6 months to the tournament, our company, when designing the shirt, had to decide upon a simple style code to be included and printed on every neck label. We opted for a very basic configuration, and it's this. 010901-5. Anyone involved with the ordering of the shirt had to place the ensuing orders using that code 010901-5. This would appear to be an innocent random arrangement of numbers, but to those with a keen eye and a passion for historic English sporting achievements, which I know, Holly, you have,
I do.
The style number takes on a completely different meaning and instead can be read as the 1st of September 2001 and the scoreline of 1-5.
Oh, yeah.
Call me petty if you will. Call me childish if you must. Pathetic also. But life, Father Simon, is a series of small victories, as Tolstoy once said. I don't think it was.
Did he? No.
So enjoy the moment. So therefore, this is a famous England victory against Germany.
Right.
Ollie, it's the qualifying stages of the 2002 World Cup. Hat-trick from Michael Owen. The last match at the Olympiastadion in Munich.
Yes, England winning away to Germany 5-1. When does that happen? Never.
So
did that.
So says Jeff, I seek absolution from the marketing company, the mobile phone company, and especially the almost 1 million German football fans who proudly wore their shirts that summer on the streets and the terraces, for little did they know that all the time they wore a garment that would have made Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code people very happy, because hiding in plain sight with the historic date and scoreline actually on their shirt from when England beat Germany in Munich. Ha ha! You're seeking repentance, Jeff. Well, he says, you know, maybe it's childish, maybe it's petty. Small victories, that's what Tolstoy said. You have to roll with the punches or something like that. Sister Holly, did you follow that?
Yes, I did. And pathetic, childish and petty, I think, is quite right.
Is that where you're going?
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to my world.
I think
yeah.
hanging on to that, you know, this was years later, 2006, and this match happened in 2001. Get over it. I just feel like it was childish. He put it in the collar of every single one. Like,
every single sportsman.
This is a sneaky thing I did that you didn't notice. And I just think that's a bit lame and a bit naff. And so for those reasons, not forgiving at all.
New voice from Holly there. Yeah,
very,
that was
very stern.
Very happy with that one.
He obviously really really enjoyed the fact that he watched the football and he thought, see all those shirts? If you knew what it said in your collar, you wouldn't be smoked.
Yes.
Mind you, the laugh, of course, was on us because Germany got to the final and lost to Brazil, but they did considerably better than England in the actual tournament.
In 2002, they did, yes. In 2006, they went out in the semis, didn't they? But still, they did better than England. And I'm going to forgive, because honestly, I would have taken that opportunity as well to be able to put a secret code,
into
all of those shirts and know that they're all wearing on the back the symbol of their defeat when Owen scored a hat-trick, Emil Heskey, Steven Gerrard as well, 5-1. In your backyard, even though we got knocked out in the quarters. But apart from that, we were the moral victors, so forgiven.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's comes from Tobias. Thank you, Tobias, for sending in this story. Father Simon, the collective, for reasons of not revealing my full identity, I will use my two middle names, Tobias Cecil. Okay. I would like to... Don't judge. I would like to take you back to an era when Snickers were called marathons.
Yes.
Platforms with flares was high fashion, and Sunday afternoon viewing was ATV's Star Soccer with Hugh Johns.
Hugh Johns, yeah.
I remember that. I was a boarder at a rather traditional public school. To give you a clue as to its identity, it is, in fact, the oldest public school in England.
Oh, right, that one. Okay.
Narrowed it down quite a lot. I was now in the fifth year and had just completed my O-levels, and it was nearly the end of the summer term. So this is very much a kind of end of term, end of year confession, of which I suspect there'll be many more. The end of the school year, the younger year groups were tasked with doing lots of end of term chores around the boarding house. This was, if you hadn't been given lots of fatigues by sixth form prefects. One of the last day jobs involved tidying the sixth form common room. This was not too challenging a set of jobs, unearthing a dusty satchel or briefcase, stacking a few textbooks, taking named clothing back to its owners, arranging tatty old cushion seats, sweeping the floor, and most importantly, returning the television to the housemaster's residence for safekeeping over the summer months. We had quite a strict housemaster, who was also the music teacher, a certain Mr. Nichols. He was tall, balding, and had a rather large nose, which was often visited by his index fingers.
Oh, lovely.
For this reason, he was known more commonly as Picker Nichols. Now, televisions in those days mostly came from radio rentals and were basically large wooden boxes with a screen, the type of TV that sometimes, due to a broken aerial, had to function the rearranged metal wire coat hanger resting on top. This, Holly, is ancient history, I appreciate. It's the way things used to be. I volunteered to take the large TV back to Picker's house and declined any offers of assistance. I wasn't weedy. I could carry this on my own. Everyone cleared off and I got ready to do my simple task. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? I laid the aerial on top and, stretching my arms from one side to the other, grabbed hold of the large bulk of the television and proceeded to walk backwards a few steps. After a couple of paces, I pivoted 90 degrees and turned towards the door. And then it happened. It was like a scene from a Laurel and Hardy silent movie. It was as if it all happened in slow motion. As I went one way, the television went in the opposite direction, ripped from my grasp by the length of electrical cable and the plug, still in the wall socket. As I watched in despair, the radio rental's wooden box landed on the wooden floor and began separating, similar to one in those cartoon scenes where all the sides of the shed fall outwards.
Yes. Yeah.
OMG, as we didn't say in those days, and a few more choice words were said under my breath. I felt the sweat on my back, my face flushed red, my collar seemed tight. I looked around and saw no one. Quickly, I tried to attach all the sides, lifted the TV back onto the small table and removed the plug and put the cable on top. And at that point, some other boys wandered into the common room. "What's happening?" they asked as they saw me fiddling with the sides and looked a bit curious. "I don't know," I replied. "I was about to take the telly to Picker's house. It started to fall apart." "You didn't drop it, did you?" they asked. "Of course not. I haven't got it off the table yet, as you can see." I then, Father Simon, proceeded to blame the notorious end-of-term final night hijinks on the sixth form, led by the notorious double act
Go on.
Of of Bunny Mortimer and Monty Greenacres, who happened to be the head of house and his deputy.
Of course.
This is what I told Picker anyway after carefully carrying the television to his place and said no more. For one reason and another, I didn't return to school in September. But I feel I must apologise to my fellow boarders for breaking their television, to Radio Rentals for patenting the first flat-pack television, and to the older boys in the sixth form for letting them take the rap, particularly Bunny Mortimer and Monty Greenacres, who I feel are probably in the House of Lords now or something. Mm. I'm sure there was a positive outcome in the school and that they possibly got an upgraded television in September, which had, you know, push-button tuning and a fancy loop aerial, that kind of thing. So, Father Simon and the Collective, please forgive me, says Tobias Cecil. Names have been changed, of obviously, mm-hmm. to protect the guilty. Sister Holly looking actually quite disapproving, I have to say.
Yeah, I think the thing is, you were just very smug, weren't you? You thought, yeah, I can carry this, I can do it all by myself, but actually you couldn't, and really you needed some help there. Also, leaving the plug plugged in at the wall, that
classic
really
mistake.
That's a rookie error, really, isn't it? Very silly. Should have come forward. Poor Buddy Mortimer and Monty
Bunny,
Green.
Bunny.
Oh, it's Bunny,
Bunny Mortimer.
Oh, fantastic. Mm. And Monty Greenacres, who obviously got the blame. Very disappointing with that, and that's why not forgiving at all.
I suspect Bunny and Monty got over it.
I suspect
did
they
did. Did they, though? We'll never know.
Yes, but, I mean, let's be honest. The chances of it affecting the rest of their lives, I think, minimal. Matt, I think, is already wound up.
Went on to run the country. I'm going to say forgiven, just because I'm sure Daddy will have dug into his pocket and bailed them out with a new telly, is what normally happens there with Buddy and Bunny.
Bunny!
And Bunny and
Bunny and Monty.
Jaunty and the rest of them. all of them don't teach that at Eton, do they? No. Turns out, how do you move a telly? Take the plug out the wall, thicko, and then go on and run the country. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Right, so it just narrows down to class war, basically.
Class war.
I think that's where it was. You called them thickos. I haven't heard that word used for a while.
Oh, no, that's just pretty very much in my armoury.
Anyway, in your armoury. Anyway, we got this.
Not forgiven, says Stephen New Brighton. Cathode ray tube TVs were notoriously difficult to carry as all the weight was at the front of the tube. He should have known that and had help. Henry in Chingford, though, says forgiven. We all lied at school to cover our actions. I once accidentally made the blackboard fall off the wall and snap, but I blamed it on the class before, so no harm done.
Fair enough, then.
Yeah. And Joe Hicks in Bagshot says not forgiven, purely because the whole story seems to have triggered Matt quite badly.
Correct.
So in addition to Monty and Bunny, we now have another victim.
It's quite true, actually. I mean, I might have played it up just a little bit.
Really?
Just to rag you.
Yeah. I know, but you knew I would bite on stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Always do.
Right. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Let's delve into the depths of the past and retrieve a previously aired confession from the crypt. Josh got in touch. Simon, Matt, Holly, Susie and the team. I love listening to the podcast every week as I drive home from work. A month or so ago, I attended a wedding where the track Oops Upside Your Head was played. I then received flashbacks from a confession you did a couple of years ago in which a bloke spilled beer all over the dance floor and everyone got soaked as they sat down to do the actions for this song. If you could dig it out, I would love to hear this on the pod. Thank you very much. Well, successfully converted from a cassette that we found in the loft into a shiny new WAV format. Here is Wicker Man's confession, Oops Upside Your Head, and Oops Again.
Something to confess. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's comes from someone who wants to be known as Wicker Man.
Oh.
So, I know, Matt's taken against you already. Father Simon, Brother Matt, and whoever the sister is. Well, it's Sister Susie from the pub. That's who it is.
Mm-hmm.
I crave forgiveness for something that occurred in the early to mid-1980s at my friend's 21st birthday bash. It's a truly cowardly episode, and I'm not proud of it, and one I've not divulged to anyone other than my wife of 35 years. I only told her a few months ago as we were listening to other confessions on your immaculate show. You have to confess, she said, but I wouldn't forgive you, she added.
Oh.
So that doesn't bode well.
Yeah.
Never mind, on we go. My friend, let's call him Steve, had been the victim of a disastrous perm that he'd undertaken prior to his birthday, which in later years sent his hairline into uncontrolled retreat.
Wow.
Anyway, his party was being held at a venue that was, as I remember, far too small for the multitude that eventually turned up.
When I turned up with a trio of friends, the festivities were already well underway. The room was awash with expensive suits, rah-rah skirts, 5-inch stilettos, the heady fragrance of Paco Rabanne, big hair and enough hairspray to warrant the place a fire hazard. Every so often, Steve, in his very expensive white Armani suit, which is pertinent to what is going to unfold, would come over and talk to us. But we couldn't hear a word he was saying as the DJ had pumped up the volume, as they say back in the day. By now, the space around the dance floor resembled nothing short of an assault course of groups of people and chairs and tables. And as more joined the bacchanalia, it became increasingly difficult to negotiate one's way to the bar. It was my turn for the next round. Three bitters and a lager. Classy, huh? I decided that rather than try to circumvent the circular dance floor, I'd take a beeline across it to get to the bar.
Oh, wow.
Eventually, I managed to get served by the Cornish barman.
Oh, here we go.
You want a tray for that?
Yeah.
That's all I have to do.
What?
That was it. He says, what? Do you want a tray for that? Right. Says the barman. No, I replied, I'm good. But actually, I wasn't. During those days, we were all well-practiced in the fine art of the four-glass carry of beer, and it was really second nature to all of us. So I picked up the four drinks in the time-honoured way and began my treacherous route back to the table. Coming through, I shouted, and for the first few steps, the crowd parted like the Red Sea. I then made the decision. Rather than walk safely around the dance floor, I decided to cross it. And it was as I was almost across my shortcut that a particularly expressive female dancer suddenly went over on her 5-inch stilettos and instinctively reached out and grabbed my arm. She quickly regained her balance and continued to dance totally unflummoxed by her near fall. Unfortunately, the same can't be said for my four-glass carry equilibrium, which was suddenly and irretrievably compromised as I felt a glass slip from my grasp. Luckily, it fell harmlessly onto the surrounding carpet next to the unoccupied table, but another was headed straight to the hard wooden dance floor. I somehow managed to keepy uppy with it until it got it over to the carpet. Having broken glass would not have been good on the dance floor.
No.
As a result, the contents of both glasses were either being safely soaked up by the carpet or, slightly more worryingly, possibly finding its own level on the wooden dance floor. I determined then to tell the bar staff of the incident so that they could mop up the spillage. I still had hold of two glasses, but no noticed that each of these now held only half the requisite amount of ale. It was a major spillage. Quickly, I put the glasses down on a vacant table and made to fight my way to the bar to report that someone had spilled a lot of beer on the dance floor and it needed to be mopped up as a matter of some urgency. I was nearly there when, to my abject horror, my ears caught the opening bars of the Gap Band's timeless party classic, Oops, Upside Your Head. Yeah. As in a classic horror film trope, I slowly turned my head around to witness the horror that was unfolding behind me. Suddenly, all my good intentions evaporated as the entire dance floor population sat on their backsides and began to pat the floor around them. This was no longer a case of damage limitation, but more a case of how do I get out of this? It was odd. It was really only through a sort of slow osmosis that those who had descended into the ale pool slowly realised what was happening. Once they had realised, they all suddenly scrambled to their feet, the blokes dabbing their trousers and the girls trying to keep their beer-soaked skirts from clinging to their legs. There were screams and expletives galore, and those queued at the bar all turned round to look. Taking advantage of the sudden gap left by them, I ordered four more drinks.
Oh, great. Good.
I took his offer of a tray. Oh, you want another tray? And steadily made my way back to our table, taking the longer but safer route through the tables and chairs. What's going on there? Asked my friend when I arrived. I turned round and, well, there's quite a kerfuffle going on. Don't know, I said. I think someone spilled a drink on the dance floor. Well, he laughed his head off. A minute or so later, Steve arrived with his ruined hair plastered to his head due to the damaging humidity. And here I've tidied up all the expletives that seem to arrive after every alternate word. Spoken in an impeccable Scouse accent, which I am not.
which I am not going to do.
Some flipping bar stewards flipping spilt flipping drink on the flipping dance floor, and I've flipping gone and flipping sat in it. Flipping everyone's flipping soaked through. And true enough, the trousers of his pertinent white Armani suit sported a large damp patch on his derriere. But hey, nice pants, Steve.
Yeah.
Shamefully, I feigned utterly believable innocence and said, oh, that's terrible. You'd think someone would have owned up and got someone to mop it up. As I said, cowardly. Father Simon, this episode haunts me to this day. I beg forgiveness, really, from anyone who sat down to innocently join in Oops Upside Your Head. But mainly, I crave forgiveness, too, from my wife, who now sees me in something of a slightly different, if not slightly diminished light, for reasons that I think you now understand. And who could blame her, says Wicker Man. Well, beer spillage is something that Sister Susie's going to feel very strongly about.
What do you
say? Yeah, a wicker man. I've seen many people trying to carry more than what your hands can carry. Don't do it. Take the tray. You should have taken the tray. They offered you one.
Yes.
You also should have walked the long way round. Who takes 4 pints across a dance floor? Nobody. Idiots, that's who. I'm afraid I agree with your wife, Wicker Man, and you're not forgiven.
Yeah, I thought that was exactly what was going to happen. Yeah. Brother Matthew.
Well, I mean, we were clearly in the 80s there, weren't we, with white Armani suit and Paco Rabanne. Oh, take me back. Am I alone in thinking that anyone who sits on the dance floor has got it coming?
Actually,
if you sit down to James and sit down, or oops, upside your head, unlucky on your head or bottom, be it. I'm absolutely in favour of this. And also the idea that, you know, use it to your advantage. Oh, it appears that everything's now, everyone's out of my way. Another 4 pints, barman. Lovely. Definitely forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
It is certainly true. You do have a good point there that sitting on a dance floor is asking for trouble.
Mm. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because spillages happen.
Yeah.
There's going to be all sorts on that dance floor. Chewing gum, alcoholic beverages.
So you have to be very, very careful. Anyway, if you'd like an old confession played again, if there's something precisely like that you'd just like to have another opportunity to enjoy, let me know about it. confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Now it's over to Brother Matt for this week's incredibly secret code phrase.
Yes, and the secret code phrase this week is stick it in my armoire. Stick it in my armoire is this week's
and
secret code phrase.
Just remind us how to
spell armoire.
Spell that.
Armoire. A-R-M-O-I-R-E.
Also, let us know if there's anyone else who's got one.
If you've got an armoire, then let's all get together.
From, anyway?
The armoire?
Yes.
We got it from a shop that I've forgotten. So it came with the wedding. We were given it as a gift.
It was a wedding present.
When we got married. And very happy we are with it too, because it's where I keep my booze. So many thanks. I can't remember who gave us the armoire.
Of course you can't.
It feels a little ungrateful now. But anyway, whoever it was,
pretty
well
magnificent
done.
Present.
Yeah,
it
was
great. I bet
great.
Mrs. Williams knows exactly who you gave it to, because that's the way that works. So if you're listening this far, thank you very much. You tweet that phrase to Twitter, or you can thread me.
No, don't do that.
Mr. Simon Mayo on Threads. Also, you can go on Blue Sky.
On the Blue Sky.
On the Blue Sky, where so many people
literally
are constantly
dozens.
Talking about this.
Yeah.
Don't forget to follow, like, and subscribe, and tell everyone else about the fabulous podcast, which is the Confessions podcast, which is officially back, even though it was away for a while, which was not our fault.
Not our fault.
Until next time, this is Sister Holly.
Hasta la vista, baby.
From the gutter, Brother Matthew.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.